Guy, what can I? Let me ask you a question in relation to what you just said prior to that last statement. I wish I could have the email here, but I'm just going to try to paraphrase. I got an email from a customer, maybe 3 days ago. Basically, her problem was, Barry, I've spent 2 months going through all the material in your manifesting portal, listening to all these mentors, going through all their techniques and courses, and I am confused. I feel like I've stirred something up that I don't want to stir up. I just want to go back to my normal life, have the job, have the good relationship, have the car. I've tried all this for years and years. It's just not your material, Barry, or what your mentors teach. It's just all confused. Maybe I'm analyzing it. And she goes on and on and on. And it's almost like what you just said. She's at the point almost where the garden is, it's, you know, all the rocks and all the cans are out of the garden. And she's trying to smooth it over, but she wants to go back. And I don't know what she's trying to say or what I'm trying to ask you here, but...
Well, I'll summarize it a little bit.
Okay.
We live, without knowing it, in a state of spiritual sleep. This is the most classic known story with regards to being spiritually asleep is in Plato's Allegory of the Caves, where he writes about men and women who live in a cave, and their back is to a fire, and they see all the shadows from their own movements on a wall in front of them, and they take the shadows to be real life. And then he says, once in a while, one of the people will break the chains and walk to the opening of the cave where the light, the sunlight, is so bright that it frightens them at first. And they're even tempted to go back into the caves and look at the shadows and live the life of shadow. But they, once in a while, someone actually exits the cave, learns the truth, and then comes back and helps others break the chains and the life of shadows. When we begin to see the truth of ourselves, the parts of us that have led us along so thoroughly up to that point, they just go, I don't want to know. I don't want to see this. This is too hard. This is too confusing. This is too difficult. And the fact is that what is speaking to us in that moment is darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Darkness looks at the light. And by this, we don't have to be spiritual, even just the light of understanding, the simple light of realizing that I've been compromised in an area of my life. Maybe I live with somebody who's abusive, and I've enabled them and myself through years of a relationship because I'm so afraid of being alone. And then one day I actually see for a split second, the problem isn't the person that's abusive. The problem is I'm afraid to be by myself and start over. And in a moment like that, when the light breaks, everything in the human being that kept them in the darkness goes, oh, no, no, no. This is too scary. This is too much. Something, listen to this, something bad will happen to you if you walk away from what has been compromising you all of your life. And because we don't have the knowledge yet, we haven't had the proper, we haven't been introduced to the principles and the right energy that makes these things come alive in us, most of us fall prey to it. And I hope that this lady or man, whoever it was that sent you that email, actually realizes the second most important thing a person could ever do. Remember that commercial, been there, done that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, how many times do I have to been there, done that before I realize, look, I don't know where I'm going, but I do know I can't stay where I've been, meaning I don't know the new me that I'm going to have to go through in order to discover a more fulfilling life. But by God, I do know the me I have been, the one that thinks approval is tantamount to being a triumphant human being, who believes that fear somehow has something good in it because it protects me from problems. And then you can make the list yourself and realize, I can't be that man or woman anymore. Then we don't have to know what we're going to do or be, because the very end of who we have been is the birth of the new self. At that point in time, and at that level, and Barry, that goes on forever if we're willing to.
Well, that, you know, I do get a lot of comments about how there's like the once bitten twice shy personal growth. I call them the personal growth dumpies. They're just tired of it. They don't want, like you say, you know, they don't want to unearth something that they're afraid of what may come up.
I think, you know what also is a big part of it, Barry? I think a big part of it is that men and women do not want to leave the mental realm. And I don't care if you have a true principle and it stays mental to you, it will become poison to you. We must take into action principles. Because if we don't act on principles, then they become a source of confusion and an actual anchor in our lives, because we continually measure ourselves by the successful principle, but we don't live it, so it never comes to life in us.
Ah, good point. Yes.
You got it?
Yes.
And that's what we don't want to do, because look how simple this is. Let's say we're talking to somebody right now, listening or reading this, and we're talking about fear. Here's a perfect, simple example. No fear exists that isn't produced by negative imagination, period. You cannot have a fear in your life that is not the dark product of a negatively imagined scenario. First, I'll ask you, can you see that?
Yes.
Now, even the fear at the simplest level of walking out into traffic, the reason we do it is because instinctually we know better. No one's going to kill himself.
Yeah, right.
But when it comes to, you know, I'd like to make a real change in my life, but I'm afraid. What am I afraid of? The image my own mind has created that shows me failing, that shows me having lost, not succeeded, being laughed at, whatever that may be for any particular person. I look at an image my mind has produced to keep me from becoming new. Now, if I actually see the truth of that, which any of us can at any moment we want to, let's say I'm at a party and I'm networking. I need to make a contact with someone because I want to further a business idea that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm standing there holding my glass of orange juice or whatever I'm drinking, and I think, you know, I should go over and talk to Bill. Or I'm a man, I want to go talk to an attractive woman. And what happens? You tell me when a thought like that comes to mind. For most of us.
Oh, when you're just wanting to talk to an attractive person that you're...
Yeah, or I see somebody and I know that it would be good for me to talk to him for whatever reason, because he understands more, he's been through more, but I don't know him and I'm going to have to walk up cold. What happens inside of us?
Oh, we might get rejected.
I'm afraid to do it.
Yeah.
Now, why am I afraid to do it? Because right inside of us, there's a voice. Actually, in my new, I think it's in the Living Now, a new audio album I have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it is, but there's a voice and it says, "Wait for me," and it's fear's voice, and it starts telling us all of the negative possibilities that will take place should we actually walk up and engage that person in a conversation.
How do you cut that voice off?
No, you're missing the point. We don't want to cut it off. We want to see it's a lie. This is what, okay, let's go back. We're talking about people who are poisoned by principles because they won't act on them.
Okay.
See, we're saying here, look, there's no easy way to do this. You're not going to read something and memorize 7 habits of whatever it is that people are, and that's going to change you. You change by changing you. And the only way we can change the things that we're afraid of, that limit us, that compromise us, is to see for a fact they are a lie. The fear is a lie. Now I have a little poem. And the poem is, "The feel is real, but the why is a lie."
Say that again.
The feel is real, but the why is a lie. In other words, the feeling of fear I have when I'm thinking about making the change, talking to the person, going in the business, whatever it is, the fear I have, that's a real feeling. Because my mind has generated a picture that, as I look at it, produces a feeling of fear. But the why is a lie, because it's my own mind creating a negative image that then it resists. And when I see the fact of that my mind has produced an image that is negative and it scares me, I don't have to think to myself, what should I do? I know that the picture is a lie, and I walk through the feeling. This is why people don't change, because they won't challenge the conditions that their own consciousness generates, because they don't recognize, in this instance, when it comes to fear, the feel is real, but the why is a lie, period.
Wow. That I'm going to put on my computer monitor, actually, because I can see what that does.
Can't you see how beautiful that is?
Yep.
Then we're not trying to be strong. This is another part, because so many self-help programs talk about, you know, imagining you're strong, imagine you this. And we don't, imagination can do nothing for us at the level of resisting a fear. If the truth is, when we affirm a strength based on the fear we have of something, we're secretly affirming the fear, because we wouldn't need to affirm strength if we weren't afraid. What we're saying is that we can see the fear produces real feelings, but we can also recognize at the moment that what is causing those feelings is a stone illusion, a trick of our own mind to keep us locked into who and what we have been, because that's what that mind is comfortable being. Then we call the bluff, and we don't try to be strong. We simply refuse to be weakened by an unconscious relationship with our own present nature.
This is a lot to wrap the mind around.
I know it is, but
it soaks,
you know what? It's all right.
It soaks in while listening to you. That's what I like about your talks.
Well, I'm glad.
You do have to go back and process what you're saying, but when you process it, it soaks in.
Process and practice.
Yes.
Let us not forget that. Process and practice. It is practice that produces perfection, not processing. There's a saying, it's one of my own, I wish I could remember it, because it's so often that it comes, it's necessary to be able to repeat it. I can't quote myself.
Mm-hmm.
Something like this: the seed of wisdom. Knowledge is the seed of wisdom, but its fruit is in action. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The seed of knowledge, the seed of wisdom is knowledge, but its fruit is in action. What we must do is take the principles that we are learning and seeing the truth of, and we must go right out into the world and find out whether or not the principle has the power or our fear is more powerful than that. When we can start to realize that we are created to recognize the truth of principle, that we are enabled to empower ourselves through them, and ultimately given everything we need through our relationship in their practice, then we know what we have to do. We have to stop thinking so much about this stuff and put on our, you know, put in the old ways, you know, put on the gird yourself, man. Pick up your sword, pick up your shield, and go meet Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this instance, in that story, the stone that David threw, stone always represented truth in the ancient languages.
Yeah, yeah.
So we go out and we pick up the stone, meaning we pick up the truth, and we slay the fears that we face, not because we're strong, but because we're willing to use the truths that we're given that have already overcome all the Goliaths we will ever face.
So, Guy, if someone was to come to you and just basically say, hey, you know, what can I do to speed up this whole practice, this whole process? I mean, how do I speed up the learning curve in the manifesting process for myself? Is it to just, I mean, is there techniques, or is it just to get into action that you're talking about?
I'll tell you a quick story, shall I?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say there was a school, and the school was for, what should we call them? I don't know. Oceanographers.
Okay.
And the every morning the teacher said, you will meet me where the river and the ocean meet at 6 a.m. so that we can study the dynamic between the river and the ocean. Now, just to paraphrase that, so we can study the dynamic between life's changes and the self that experiences them. You follow the metaphor?
Yes.
The ocean would be the potential of ourselves, and the river would be this life that stirs us into discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
And so you'll meet me there where the river meets the ocean every morning at 6 a.m., and we will do our field work there. And every morning, all of the students do that. They get there at 6 a.m. They do their semester of work. And at the end of the semester, only one out of the 15 students gets an A. All the rest get C's.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, what's with this? I met there at 6 a.m. I did everything you asked me to do. And the teacher says, no, yes, rather, you did all I asked you to do, and that's all you did. Because the one student who got an A, you know what she did? They go, no. He said, she went into the water where the ocean and the river meet. Now, the meaning of the little story is that we have to enter into life. This isn't an exercise in thinking. We're not going to think ourselves into well-being. We have to discover that well-being is already our right. And that what we think ourselves into essentially is fear. We think ourselves into relationships with conditions that instead of actually finding out what they hold for us, we imagine the holdings. So we want to go into life, Barry. We want to take one idea, like the one we've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
that the feel is real but the why is a lie. And we want to, day in and day out, practice using that idea in the sense of entering into the waters where the river and the ocean meet. I'm at work, and I'm sitting at my desk, and I have an idea about a way to improve the business operation. But I'm afraid of the supervisor, or I don't want to bring it up at the meeting because I think people will laugh at me because I know they think I'm stupid, and I don't want to prove it, so I'll keep my mouth shut. I mean, we could make a list 10,000 miles long, but the point is that each of us as an individual has all of these unique relationships through the kind of life that we have. We take the principle into life. We go into the waters, and we prove for ourselves that the feel is real. We already know that, but we prove that the why is a lie. We discover for ourselves that fear's power over us is through getting us to believe in what it tells us is true. We begin to dare to find out, we begin to dare to do what we know or suspect is true in the moment instead of letting the fear define us in that moment. That's action.
Yeah, I've heard it called inspired action.
Well, whatever it is, but the point is this. See, this isn't, how do I say it? This is a favorite saying of mine. Truth is a full contact sport.
Yes, yes, indeed it is.
See, and we don't want full contact sport. We're couch potatoes.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, the electronic income reducer.
Yeah.
The TV.
I don't want to deal with stuff that's difficult. I want to find my way around it. And here's another saying: what we go around comes back around.
Yeah.
The way out is through, Barry. The way out is through.
Right. Well, that is some powerful insight there. And that's what I've always loved about your teaching is that you can feel it when you say it. when you say it, Guy Finley, and you know,
you can feel it when you say it, Barry. But you know, look, do you know why? In this instance, if I say a truth, do you know why you feel it or anyone else who's listening?
Why?
Because I know without thinking that it's true. So it is the truth that says it, and it is the truth in you that feels and reverberates with that. Now, you must, everyone listening or reading must, become the same. I'm nothing special. No one is special. We are all given something special to discover what is genuinely special, which is these truths. The clearer I am about that, and the more willing I am to jump into the kind of action we've been talking about, where I risk it, I find out whether or not the fear is real. Each time I discover the fear isn't real, that it's a lie, am I not invested with more faith that the next time I find a fear, that it's equally a lie? In other words, I will doubt and dismiss a dark state more and more quickly because I have seen more and more that these dark states that have dominated me are lies. Then I become an expert unto myself, because truth has made me such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have me at a loss for words. And the church bells are going off, actually, in the beach here. That's funny.
Where are you, Barry?
I'm in Virginia Beach, right on the Atlantic Ocean here, and we have a church across from our condo, and the bells are going off.
Nice weather there today?
No, it's been rainy on the East Coast for the last 3 days.
Did you have any impact from the last hurricanes?
The whole East Coast has just been rained on, basically.
Yeah, but no damage there.
No, you know, Virginia Beach is a very, it's almost a protected place in a strange kind of way. The old joke here is that we have Edgar Casey to predict them away and Pat Robinson to pray them away.
Yeah.
Because the 700 Club is out here.
Uh-huh.
And Pat Robinson made a fool of himself by saying that he prayed the hurricane away about 10 years ago, and
yeah, boy.
And Edgar Casey is the prophet that did a lot of readings back in the 20s, and he had always said this is one of the safest places in the U.S., so we put those two together and feel that's the reason we never get hit.
Well, whatever gets you through the night.
Yeah, it's all tongue-in-cheek, but it's fun to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, there is something that I can't resist asking you, and some of it you may have already said, but I think maybe by asking this way, maybe there's something
Sure.
else you can say about it. One of the there's a lot of folks who teach a step-by-step process to manifestation, and, you know, pretty much how to master physicality or, you know, bring forth the experiences that you want or the things that you want. And it seems that always one of those steps is getting clear. And I wanted to ask you about unconscious limiting beliefs. And some teachers say that if we don't dive deep into, you know, the untilled soil of our soul or our subconscious, we're going to never know what they are. But do we have to even go there? Do we truly have to, like, or does the getting clear process have to even be joined to the limiting belief portion of figuring out what's beneath the surface that's causing you to do what you do?
Well, yes. There was a great philosopher, his name was Fenelon, and he said that a rock beneath the surface of the earth weighs as much as one that sits on the surface of the earth. So it's true with these things that compromise and limit us. The question is, what are we willing to uncover? Because the truth is, there's no end to what we can discover in ourselves. The richest, I'm not even sure how to say this to you. We have an interior richness, Barry, that is unlimited. and it is unlimited because the resources in this nature of ours, they are unlimited. We have a capacity and are created to be literally living transformers. We transform in our minds everything that we become conscious of. And because our minds themselves are part of a consciousness that has no beginning and end, either in terms of its darkness or its light, that means that we are invited to participate in a never-ending process of being both perfected and perfecting ourselves through this ability to be awake. So when we talk about limitations, the truth is anything that we imagine ourselves through limits us. Anything. And we have the experience in scale of making that discovery every time we imagine ourselves in the new relationship, the new car, the new home, the new body, the new clothes. Because while it's enriching us while we imagine those things, the minute that we achieve what we've imagined, we now find ourselves feeling as though it was not the answer. And then we start over again. Well, basically what I teach is, why start over and over again, with something that if we would just simply see the truth of it, we wouldn't need to start over and again. We would simply be in the present moment, participating in this life instead of trying to possess it through imagery, and made whole moment to moment, and enjoy that because it's been given to us to do. Do you row? Here's a man, he's on a river, and the river's flowing in a certain direction. How wise is he? If he doesn't have to paddle to go with the river, how wise is he to paddle?
Not wise.
He's just wasting energy, isn't he?
Yes.
Most of us are wasting energy when we try to make ourselves happy. In fact, I'll say it. When we try to make ourselves happy, we're wasting energy.
Do you know that I actually came up with a definition of happiness?
And what's that?
And I don't know. And I laugh because when I came up with this, I said, well, maybe could there truly be anything else? To me, happiness is when you have what you have, when you're doing what you want to do, and when you're being who you want to be.
Yes.
And if you're doing all three of those, what more can there be?
There can't be. But into that beautiful triad, those three things you just said,
right,
slinks this, and I don't want to be too biblical, you know, slinks this serpent, this thought. And it says, yeah, this is good, but wouldn't it be better if we had a little more of this?
The bigger boat theory.
Yes. Wouldn't it be better if we just added a dash of that, see? And then we go, yeah, you know, you're right. And why? Because in that moment, I can imagine something bigger, better, broader. And my imagination holds in it a certain set of sensations that when I feel them, I take that to be the reality. Then I spend my life trying to procure those things, never realizing, again, as we've been covering, that happiness is an inside job. Contentment is an inside affair. And that life and all of the things that are outside of us are all there in order for us to discover that simple truth. The clearer it becomes to us, the less likely we are to compromise ourselves in the pursuit of those things that promise contentment but deliver fear and frustration.
That goes into what you just said. It kind of goes into this conversation I was having with another friend. Actually, we were talking about this in a kind of a interesting factual way, or an observing way. We were noticing that there's a lot of people that we've been in contact with or that we've heard about, that these executives and these people who are just immersed into the professional acceptance and status of the world, they're taking off for India more and more lately, you know, and they're going over there to find something. And you know, the thought came up that you know, there's people that either they want to find nirvana, they want to find enlightenment, and for some reason they feel they have to go somewhere else to do it, to India. And I mean, I'm just thinking of three people that I know who have done this in the past year.
When I was signed to Motown Records, I don't know if you know this, my partner and I, Tony Martin Jr., we were the first white soft rock artists ever to sign with Motown Records.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the first white duo signed to Jobet, their publishing arm. And this was in 1970.
Uh-huh.
They had just signed Rare Earth. Most people won't know these names, but I just want to celebrate that was their first rock group, and we were their first soft rock, an acoustic act.
Right.
And over the 4 or 5 years that we were with Motown, we had quite a few hit records with other artists and became very popular with Mr. Gordy. And eventually were managed by Suzanne DePass, who was at the time vice president, then became president of Motown. And as such, we were privileged to be invited to a host of parties at Mr. Gordy's. Now, unfortunately, I shouldn't have said that part because I want to keep the keep the names whatever, keep the names and places innocent, or change the names to so forth and so on.
Sure, sure.
But I remember being at that party and asking Suzanne if and when she thought we would finally turn the corner and become the huge white successful recording act that Motown was telling us we would become. I was impatient.
Mm-hmm.
And I attributed power to her because of her position in Motown.
Mm-hmm.
And she answered me as best she could, and I thanked her, and I went on my way. But about 5 minutes later, by accident, I heard her talking to Mr. Gordy. And she was basically asking Mr. Gordy the same thing about her life that I had been asking her about. Well, that's not the end of the story. And then I actually kind of trailed Mr. Gordy, because, you know, even back in the early, this was my spiritual life really began at the age of about 11. So even back then, in the Motown days, I was 21. I was on the trail of it already. I knew that something was up. I just wasn't clear at 21 yet what it was. But that night was pivotal,
mm-hmm.
because I followed Mr. Gordy secretly and sort of hid behind a sliding glass door, and he was sitting there talking to Barry Diller, and who was a bigger, more successful businessman than Mr. Gordy was.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Gordy was having ostensibly the same conversation that Suzanne had with him. And I'm sitting there, and I actually got sick to my stomach that night. Because if I'm looking to Suzanne as a power,
mm-hmm.
and she's looking to Mr. Gordy as a power, Mr. Gordy's looking to Barry Diller as a power, and I know that Diller is going to go look to somebody as a power. Who has the power?
Nobody.
Exactly. Which is why all the trips to the East, everything that human beings do to search for someone who will do something for them that way, is a waste. The only real benefit in it, and this comes from a man who, by the way, spent time in India, traveling around the world, throwing himself at the feet of every possible person who might change his life, and then coming home completely empty-handed, is I'm saying that what we must do is recognize that what needs to be done can only be done within ourselves and by ourselves, for ourselves. And the clearer we get on that, the more we are put in a place where, instead of looking for some power outside of ourselves to resolve disturbances, we begin at last to realize that the disturbances in themselves have a reason and a rhyme and a purpose, and that our relationship with them in consciousness is the only way to change ourselves so that we become what our heart of hearts has been telling us all along we're meant to be. Then we're on the right track because we're working in the right place.
Do you feel that any type of, or I'll just plainly ask you, do you meditate? Do you feel that a meditative practice can help us in this inner quest?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And maybe that's a form of prayer for some people. Maybe that's
absolutely.
Okay.
And even that, see, the beauty of that is, look, I am at the foundation where I speak four times a week to a group of men and women in Berlin, Oregon. And we have a dedicated meditation time, one of those four times that we meet, because we are interested in discovering through meditation what real relationship with life is.
Mm-hmm.
Meditation is not the act of simply sitting and repeating something or breathing in a certain way or standing in our head on our heads. Well, but for some people it is.
You're right,
and that's
right.
Okay, as long as we continue to discover the limitation in the practice. I'm going to say it again, because it's right to the heart of everything we've been talking about. We must continually realize the limitation in what we're doing. We're presently afraid of realizing the limitation in what we do because we don't know what else to do when we run into the end of what we know to do. And what we're discovering, Barry, and what everyone is meant to learn, is that the limitation is the invitation. Discovering where I can't go farther is not the end of how far there is to go. It's just the end of where that self can take itself. And when I really see that, then I have to let go of what I've been holding on to, the ideas that I have about myself, the practices that I believe are perfect. These things are clearly seen as being, at that point, not the path, but that which prohibits them. Then I let go and I'm on a new path in the moment. And I do all that is capable of being done with the new things that I've seen. And then they become the limitations. And then I let them go. And I go through this beautiful process of recovering a real relationship with life in its limitless condition. By what? By going through what I have been limited by seeing that the end of my present view is not the end of my possibilities.
There's so many truths to put on a poster board, I can't even begin to start where. So I really enjoyed what you just said there. That is powerful.
It's, you know why? Because it's so... Because we know it's true, it's encouraging to hear the truth, and we want to live by it. Now, that's why I say truth is a full contact sport. Now the rubber has to meet the road, doesn't it?
You know,
now here I am, and I suddenly run into where I realize, you know what, I've gone as far as I can go with this deal. So what are my choices? Do I let fear or distrust or bitterness begin to tell me what the choices are? Or do I recognize I've gone as far as I can now? I'm not going to give up the hope that there's further to go. I know there is, only I can't give that to myself. I have to wait upon it. I have to let go of who I've been in order for the new me to reveal itself. New possibilities only present themselves when we finally let go of all that we are clinging to protect ourselves from what we fear has come to an end. See, the beginning is in the end, Barry. The beginning is in the end. The end and the beginning are not separate things. We're afraid of ends. We believe the end is the end. The end is only the end when we get negative and resist it, because then we don't learn from it.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely.
And this is classic, true, beautiful spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
I die in order that I might live. But it isn't I that dies. It's the self that I've been. The series of ideas and beliefs and things that I've clinged to that were of value when I first picked them up, but now they're of no more value to me.
Yeah.
So instead of building a shrine and turning them into icons that merely poison me with their emptiness, I have to let them go. But if I will, because it is truth itself that is promised its success in life, the new reality is born in me, and I walk a new path, if I'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been an incredible 75 minutes of talk here, and you know, I just realize I could go on and on here and just keep asking and listening and asking and listening. And
well, we've had a good, this has been a good heartfelt, meaningful dialogue between two men.
Yes.
And you take this and work with it, do what you need to do to get other into the hands of people who are receptive. And then as it will naturally, Barry, because of the man you are, not so much of what will become of this, although naturally we'll hold in our mind's eye the greatest possible success for it, then we'll talk again because you are a man on the way yourself. So
yeah.
These are natural relationships, and they don't take work to keep them together. They do take work to grow in together, but
sure.
You'll see. We'll speak again for sure.
Oh, absolutely.